Well, also. So this morning I'd like to recommend like a cook in a fast food joint. I'd like to recommend the special for the morning. And special for the morning is that on those occasions, perhaps even now, when you sit down to meditate and it just seems like your mind is overcast by a solid bank of chit-chat. Just one thought after another, after another, after another. There's no release, it's just cluttered, totally cluttered, like a mob. In such occasion, it's as if nature abhors a void. You know, we've heard that all the way back from Aristotle. The space of the mind, it's as if it abhors a void, so it just fills, whether it's from anxiety or just habit or whatever it may be. The space of the mind just gets filled with just junk, you know, conceptual junk. And when that happens, it can be helpful, I have found, to fill it with something else. Because if you simply try to rest in awareness, then you just maybe feel like you're sitting, you know, just with this, surrounded by a swarm of bees and just lots of buzzy, 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 but no real value in it, just a lot of noise. And so to fill that space with something else, go out. So I was raised partly in the suburbs, so it's kind of like getting out of the suburbs and going out into the countryside, you know, and literally like here, going out into the countryside, that you go into a space where there are no thoughts, like where there's no people, and the countryside here is your body. So what I'd like to do is talk about this session before, so I can just leave you to it, and you don't have to multitask during the session. And so settle body, speech, and mind, natural state, come to your best approximation, come to that stillness. But as soon as it's settled, then direct the full light of your awareness, really focus your awareness in the Asanga method of attending to the body, the whole space of the body, diffuse, not highly focused on the abdomen or the nostrils, anywhere else. Just bring your awareness, let the light of your awareness flood the space of your body, the somatic field, and do attend to the sensations throughout that field, particularly the sensations of the fluctuations of the respiration. So now the space of your mind is filled with a somatic space. Yeah, it could be filled with the visual, it could be filled with auditory, it could be filled with mental, but now the space of your mind, where you're focusing your mental awareness, is now filled, it's become coextensive with, as much as you can, the space of the body. And the space of the body has a lot going on in it. You know, a lot of tactile sensations, earth, water, fire, air. But then specifically what you'll be focusing on will be the fluctuations corresponding to the respiration. And they're going on all along. The advantage of this is that all of these sensations in the body are non-conceptual. They don't talk, they have no reference. And so it's more like just filled with nature rather than filled with a crowd of people who are all talking, talking, talking. So do that for a while. Just settle in. And just breathing out that release with every out-breath, continue to release all the way to the end, until you find that the kind of the fog of noise, just the sheer mob or clutter of noise subsides, and then you can withdraw your awareness. And now perhaps with more spaciousness, with more less clutter, more internal space, so that when you withdraw your awareness right back to its own place, it's not swarmed by compulsive and obsessive thoughts, but has just more space. And at that point, I'd like to give you another transmission. Okay, right now I'll give it to you, so then you can just focus on the practice. This was a very concise and enormously helpful teaching from Yangtze Rinpoche, and it's excerpted from his root text on the view, meditation, and conduct of Dzogchen. And so I'd like to focus just now, just on his teachings within that text of shamatha, within the Dzogchen. And this is from a man who is a vidyadhara, who's achieved shamatha. I have this on good authority from my own teacher, Gyatso Rinpoche, has achieved shamatha and vipassana and has realized rikpa. In fact, he's regarded as an emanation of Vimalamitra. So quite an extraordinary being. And so here's what he says. I'm just excerpting this from his text on the view, meditation, and conduct of Dzogchen. So his words are very concise. This is a very short root text, shamatha, vipassana, and the whole view, meditation, and conduct of Dzogchen. And so here's what he says. If you wish to look into the mirror of the actual nature of your mind. Do not look outward, rather look inward. So in this context, outward is not really spatial. I don't think it's spatial, because you can look outward and see images, like you can see outward look and look at a Mickey Mouse on top of my head, kind of like, okay, it's over here, that's outward. Well, that is outward, but I think what is meant here is outward means directing the attention to any of the five sensory fields. That's outward. Now, they're not really outward because the colors are not really there, but in a meaningful way, but they certainly look like they're there. And we often speak of our thoughts being inward. And so don't look outwards to the five sensory fields. Direct your awareness not outwards to those sensory fields, but into the remaining field, which we would generally call inward, the field of the mind. So do not look outward, rather look inward. And this is especially helpful too, because when we look outwards, we do have a strong tendency to reify whatever we're touching. And if we reify, we get stuck, because it's just primed then for any of the other mental afflictions to come in. And so we see these appearances outside, we reify them, and then we're very easily drawn away, distracted in one way or another. So that's the first point, simple point. And so he continues now, just in the root text. Looking outwards involves the delusion of reification. And we see this is true for everybody, for scientists, poets, gardeners, everybody. This is our tendency. By looking inward, you observe your own mind. Okay, so very concise, very straightforward. And then, do not follow after past thoughts, or thoughts pertaining to the past, or anticipate thoughts to come. So again, let your awareness, as you are so familiar with, let your awareness hover in the immediacy of the present moment. As soon as you encounter the agitated thoughts of the present, just the buzzing of thoughts arising in the present, that may be about the present. As soon as you encounter the agitated thoughts of the present, by directing your mind inwards, loosely rest right there. So be attentive to, be aware of, these thoughts that are arising, these agitated, buzzing thoughts. And by directing your mind inwards, your mind here means your attention, loosely rest right there, without modifying them in the slightest. This natural settling of thoughts is a way of resting, but it is not the main practice. The main practice is to realize Rigpa. However, in that very way of resting, you are ready to encounter pristine awareness, which is the main practice. Okay, so this is right along the same trajectory. So in the initial way of just getting everything to calm down, it's like going out to the countryside, where there's no talking, there's no chit-chat, just out in the countryside of the field of your body. Then you withdraw, you come back, you come uptown. That is, but either way, what's happening here is we're not dwelling in the mind. Because in the mind is where all the mischief is. All the problems are in the mind. That's where all the mental afflictions are, all the thoughts are. All kinds of delusion for all of us. They're all in the mind. They're not in the body. The body doesn't get delusional. The body gets ill, gets painful, but the body doesn't get delusional, right? And so you come out into the body, then you're into a delusion-free zone, a concept-free zone. Right? And then if you simply withdraw in awareness and you're resting in awareness, once again, you're not resting in the mind. You're recognizing the thoughts pertaining to the past, and you're recognizing just enough that you don't follow after them. You recognize the thoughts arising pertaining to the future. You recognize just enough not to get hooked by them and drawn into the future, and likewise, the thoughts kind of revolving around the present moment. You simply recognize them, but not from within them, without the cognitive fusion. And again, you just put your whole mind at ease, mind at rest, by releasing any incentive to modify them even in the slightest. So you just loosely rest right there. You know where. Awareness resting right in its own place. So this by itself will not likely take you all the way to Rigpa, but it's going to take you a lot closer than where you were before. As soon as you rest, he continues, and then we'll stop. As soon as you rest in your natural state, Natural state means without trying to modify, contrive, without to develop or improve your mind in any way, just resting in a natural state. Thoughts spontaneously cease and depart. They have no owner. They have nothing to cling to. They can't. They're like parasites that don't get anything to eat. You know. Then they just evaporate. They just release. They just go away. Thoughts spontaneously cease and depart. Right where the luster of thoughts disappears, right where the thoughts disappear, is the empty, transparent nature of the mind. So that's going to be a major transition point right there, between the shamatha and vipassana. Right where, so you observe the thoughts arising, but right where they cease, and they cease all by themselves, you don't have to antidote them, remedy them, right where the thoughts cease, that's where you'll be attending. Because right there, in that space, in that point of focus, is the empty, transparent nature of the mind. Now, when you do cease, when you rest, and all thoughts do cease, now this will occur on occasion, many, many occasions, before you achieve shamatha, but the culminating phase of this, where thoughts cease, is when actually you've come to the end of the line of the path of shamatha, and you're slipping into that third type of mindfulness, where you're just, all that remains is your substrate, just that sheer vacuity, that sheer absence of appearance, right? So that would be the culminating, that would be kind of the grand finale. But before then, of course, there will be many cases along the path when thoughts cease. And right after that, you may feel kind of drowsy, kind of dull, because you don't have any clear object. There's nothing to bear in mind, because there's nothing in mind. You're dealing with vacuity. So when we're presented with that, it's easy just kind of become complacent, to slip into kind of a laxity. Laxity, the Tibetan term, literally means to sink. So you know, when you don't have something to engage with, as I'm looking to Chucho, then I engage with him, then okay, I'm really, then I have some clarity, because I have clarity with respect to Chucho's presence there. But if I were looking right where Chucho is, and then suddenly there's just nothing there at all, then it would be very easy just kind of like, well, now there's nothing to do. And then slip back and slip into a type of drowsiness or lack of clarity. What you need to do then, though, of course, and this is along the path, but you can already be anticipating the culmination of this path of shamatha. And that is when you come to that, where you're just slipping into, you're just attending to the substrate, and the substrate's of the very nature of unknowing. And there's no target, nothing to sharpen your knife against, because it was just a sheer absence of appearances. At that point, you could kind of just veg out there, you know, just hang out and kind of, who knows, slip. But you know what to do then, in anticipation, whether this is months away or years or lifetimes away, you know what to do when you come to that third type of mindfulness. You invert your awareness right in upon itself, and there's the grand finale. The self-illuminating mindfulness, you're now, one could say, luxuriating in. You're bathing in, you're drenched in the luminosity of your own substrate consciousness, right? So there's nothing dull about that, because this self-illuminating, the substrate consciousness, is clearly, brightly astaining itself. Then, no problem of dullness. But just before then, you could be slipping into kind of a dullness if you're simply attending to that sheer vacuity. But if you invert it, then there's kind of like the clarity of the breaking, like dawn breaking. It's like the clarity of the sun coming over the horizon, right? Then, if you can realize that, then, and that is simply the substrate consciousness, but it is, as Dzogchen Lingpa said, or Padmasambhava said, it's the essential nature of your mind. You now have it bare. It's not rikpa, but stripped down to its nakedness, its primal quality, its essential quality, just sheer luminosity and cognizance. And you're seeing that without mediation. You know. So if you didn't know better, you'd very easily think it is rikpa. Of course it's not. But you're coming quite close, quite close. From there to ascertaining rikpa is not a long trip. It may be a long trip from where you are right now to ascertaining the substrate consciousness. Like, you know, that can be, as it said in the Vajra Essence, that can be, take quite a long time, and just a lot of stuff coming up. But Padmasambhava said, yeah, still, it's worth it. It's worth it. So that's it. That's a very, very concise account of this practice. So I think I have nothing to add. I'm just going to read it now one more time. And now you just transmission, no commentary at all, okay? Because here it is. Here are the seeds that I like to sow in your mind stream, and they will then germinate as you're sitting quietly. So I'll just now straight read it to this practice. So I think I have nothing to add. I'm just going to read it now one more time. And now you just transmission, no commentary at all, okay? Because here it is. Here are the seeds that I like to sow in your mind stream, and they will then germinate as you're sitting quietly. So I'll just now straight read it. If you wish to look into the mirror of the actual nature of your mind, do not look outward, rather look inward. Looking outward involves the delusion of reification. By looking inward, you observe your own mind. Do not follow after past thoughts or anticipate thoughts to come. As soon as you encounter the agitated thoughts of the present, by directing your mind inwards, loosely rest right there, without modifying them in the slightest. This natural settling of thoughts is a way of resting, but is not the main practice. However, in that very way of resting, you are ready to encounter pristine awareness, which is the main practice. As soon as you rest in your natural state, thoughts spontaneously cease and depart. Right where the luster of thoughts disappears is the empty, transparent nature of the mind. So let's practice quietly. I'll simply set the timer. So we are said to be dwelling in samsara for one simple reason. We have minds. Remember? Semjin, because we are mind havers, therefore that means we are in samsara. Buddhas are not mind havers. And like samsara, there are nice neighborhoods and not so nice neighborhoods. Places that are very pleasant for the time being can be very pleasant to dwell in, and many others that are not pleasant to dwell in. And of course, there should be, and there is, an exact parallel. In our own mind states, we can probably experience hell realms on occasion, and preta, animal, and all the way through, just, you know, even in the course of one day it's possible, these facsimiles. And actually, the facsimiles may be seeds that can ripen in actual such rebirths. But the point here is a very simple one before we head out to the day. And that is, when the mind is in a really wholesome state, it's pleasant, it's calm, it's serene, virtuous, then it can be quite nice to dwell in the mind, you know. Even if it's imbued with dualistic grasping, at least for the time being, you know, it's not a bad place to hang out. But there are many other occasions when it's not a nice place to hang out at all, for a myriad of reasons, which you know all too well. And so on those occasions, we have a number of options, and I'm sure we have more than three, but three come to mind. Or simply put, two. And that is, if the mind is really, like as one author said, like a bad neighborhood, then get out of the neighborhood. And you can go out to the five physical senses. So one of them, of course, is out into the body. You can go into the infirmary, totally melt down, relax utterly, and let your awareness come out of the space of the mind where all the thoughts, memories, and emotions are, and come into this non-conceptual space and just rest in the infirmary, relaxing. That can be very, very healing in so many ways, because we're not getting in the way of the natural capacity of the body-mind to heal itself. So we can come out of our minds into just simply one sensory domain. That's the physical, just into the infirmary. Or, as I've recommended to a number of you just in our one-on-one meetings, go out for a walk, and then you can come out. But the whole point is come out of your mind. We still have a lingering, probably, notion of the mind being in the head. Absolutely come out of your head. definitely come out. And out into space, out into visual space, auditory space. If there are fragrances, note the fragrances and so forth. And then, of course, there's your body, the sensations arising throughout the body as you're walking, the sensations of the body in contact with the ground, the earth element. So coming out, that can be very, very soothing, a wonderful kind of vacation, a holiday from the congestion of the mind. So that's one possibility. And it's really doable. You don't need to be an accomplished yogi to do this, right? And it's one reason, I'm sure, why contemplatives throughout history, East and West, if they are, you know, going for a place for full-time practice, they will not go to a city. If they're very accomplished, then why not? You can go anywhere you like. But if you're not already very accomplished, then just look where the hermitages are throughout Europe, you know, that were established 500, 1,000 years ago. They're always in places of great beauty. Look at Greece, where they established hermitages there. I mean, every single one of them are just drop-dead gorgeous. Go to Tibet, find the hermitages. They all have fantastic views. And even in Thailand, where, you know, you don't have the great mountains and so forth, they go off into jungle, where it's very quiet, serene, very pleasant. You know, especially if you live there, then that would be quite normal. And so one way is to come out of the mind, out into the physical senses, out into nature. Out into nature. It can be tremendously soothing. So there's one possibility. And the other, if as we saw here, look inwards to your mind, if the five senses are looking outwards, then the mind is inwards, right? That's what we're looking at. We're directing mind inwards. But instead of getting inwards and getting stuck halfway, that is getting stuck right in that domain of your mind, go inwards, right? And that is go right into awareness itself. Right into awareness itself. So the words are always a bit misleading. But go just, but you know it perfectly well. You've been around for a while now. And that is just go into awareness. Simply rest in awareness. And resting in awareness, then once again you've stepped outside the mind. As you know, you're like observing the cattle and the sheep of your herd. You're not looking at the herd from within the herd, but from afar, attending to the mind, but not from within the mind. So on the one hand, I'll end on this point. On the one hand, it can look like the five physical senses are outward, in a way they certainly appear to be, and the mind appears to be inward. And then, but when we just rest in awareness, that can seem really appear to be inward. But if when you're really resting in awareness and you are really quite significantly free of conceptualization, you're really just living in a concept-free zone, you know, like Berkeley is a nuclear-free zone. I'd love to see them enforce it, but it's a nice thought. And so you're in a concept-free and a thought-free zone when you're resting in awareness, right? Well, insofar as it's really thought-free, non-conceptual, then you're not actively involved in dualistic grasping, the conceptual construction of subject and object, and therefore you're not involved in the conceptual construction of out there and in here. Because again, you know, just looking at it for 5 seconds, you see it's kind of a joke. And that is, I'm looking outwards, right? I'm looking way across the room to Corinna, you know, so I see the blue of her shirt. Yes and no. I mean, yes, it appears, but of course that's completely an illusion. That is appearance. Yeah, they look to be over there, but we've been through this so many times. The appearance of her blue shirt, that's not over there. It appears to be, yeah, but it's not. Any more than if I visualize Mickey Mouse on top of her head, that Mickey Mouse isn't over there. Appears to be, appears but isn't there. You ever heard that phrase before? Appears but isn't there. The blue appears and it's not there. And that's a point on which physicists and neuroscientists and Buddhists can all agree. Appears, yes, not there. And so that's not really out there. It's only when we conceptualize and we think, oh, Corinne has a shirt that has a blue color to it, and she is wearing a shirt and she is over there. Okay, now it's over there. But that comes through conceptual designation, superimposing the conceptual matrix on a non-conceptual field of appearances. And those appearances are not over there, right? And the appearances are not inside my head, and the appearances are not someplace between Corinne and myself either. So when you're resting in awareness, it's not really that you've gone in, like to what Descartes called the pineal gland, you know, like the very, very interior of your brain, you know, where you got your soul infused with the hypodermic from God. It's not really inner, like in the very center of your head. Because if you're really resting in awareness, free of conceptual designation, free of imputation, then the very notion of inner doesn't mean anything. And outer doesn't mean anything. So then it would be more like thoughts are inner, insofar as we're grasping to them. Be quiet now, I want to turn my mind inside. I want to look at my thoughts and frown and look, oh yeah, I hear my thoughts, yeah. Entangled in, as if that's really in, private. Whereas the appearances are out there public, because we can intersubjectively validate them. So it looks that way at first glance. Five sensory appearances are out there, mind is in here. But if you're resting in awareness, then neither inner nor outer. But most importantly, you're not in your mind, which can be really very refreshing. So enjoy that. See you later.